And now, from Star Worldwide Networks, it's time for Don Cromwell Live, an insightful, entertaining look into all aspects of the music industry. You'll never hear music the same way again. Now here's your host, producer, songwriter, musician, and former Air Supply and Eddie Money bassist, Don Cromwell.
All right, let's get the clapping going in here. There's two of us now. We're starting to get live people back in here. Welcome, everybody, to Don Cromwell Live. So happy to have you here tonight on March 9th, 2022. Hard to believe we're moving through this year already. Seems like we just had Thanksgiving, then Christmas. But always appreciate you tuning in, whether it's live right now on the web or at some future point on the podcast. Again, crazy stuff going on in the world. I'm not going to politicize anything too much, but just pray for peace over there in the Russia-Ukraine dilemma. It's just a mess. COVID just starts to come down a little bit. Everybody's coming out of their shell, and that kicks in. But, you know, for me, it's all about positive vibes. That's why I do this show. That's why I love bringing on good guests. And tonight is no exception. So happy to have this man on. I've been trying to connect with him for a while through a mutual friend, Craig, and another Craig. This man is an awesome talent. From what I can tell, just a great guy married to a great woman who I've met briefly, Mr. Craig Wayne Boyd. Welcome, Craig.
Yes, sir. Hey, how are you, brother?
Fantastic.
And I feel like I can call you brother.
Yes, you can. And it is funny, as I said, you don't even know it. I've been our mutual friend Craig Duswalt, and he may surprise us with a call. We'll see tonight. But we've been talking about you and your beautiful wife. Worked for Craig's wife, Natasha, at the model agency, and I've met her a few times. But he always said, man, DC, you got to meet Craig. You got to meet Craig. And so here we are finally. We've never met face-to-face, but that's the beauty of this show. That's the beauty of the internet, social media. Craig, it's just a real pleasure to finally connect.
Well, I am very flattered that you asked me to come on. And it's an honor of mine seeing that one of my primary instruments growing up, in fact, when I moved to Nashville, was being a bass player. So talking to one of my heroes is great.
Well, I don't know about a hero, but I do want to say I saw a video with you and your son, I believe, and he's playing piano to something, and you're playing, is that a Gibson EB3 bass?
Yes, yeah, I bought that for him. at least that's what I told my wife.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I picked up on it right away. What's your son's playing a Van Halen song or something, if I remember?
Oh, yeah, we were playing Jump. He was...
That's right.
He was like, Dad, I want to try to figure that out. And in about 10 minutes, he had it figured out.
Oh, my gosh. And how old is he?
He's 9.
Oh, my gosh.
9 years old. He's also playing bass as a primary instrument. He's got a little band going on that he's playing with.
Oh, that's so cool, man. These young kids are, you know, you see it on the internet, these six-year-olds that are playing drums like, you know, John Bonham. But I dug it, but I did notice, I said, I think that's a Gibson EB3. I have one. I'm looking at it right now and can't beat those. I'm older than you, I'm sure. And, you know, back in the day, I was a big fan of Jack Bruce and trios and stuff like that. But it sounded good. The two of you sounded good. So did you ever play bass in a band?
I did. That's where I got my start in the music industry. I started playing full-time for my church when I was 13, and then when I was 19, I was in my first record deal with a company called Wind Up Records. You might know them from the band called Creed.
Sure.
I was in a band that was on the same label as them, and we were touring doing Ozfest and Warped Tours, the Vans Warped Tours, and all that kind of fun stuff, and that was at 19. That was my first venture in the music industry, period.
So you're from Dallas, Texas, or Dallas area?
Mm-hmm. Yep, from Mesquite, Texas, right outside of Dallas.
Mesquite, Texas. Craig and Natasha live somewhere near there. Do you know where they are? They're somewhere outside of Dallas.
Yeah, they're up on the north side of Dallas, I believe. I can't remember exactly where they moved. They were telling us a bunch of different places that they were looking at. I can't remember where they decided on.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, they're out in the area.
They love it. They like, you know, they used to live a couple miles from me, so I miss them. But I talk to Craig all the time, and they just love it. They bought a home on a golf course. And if you know Craig, he's a big golfer, and he says, DC, He's trying to get me to move to Texas. I'm not quite ready for that. And then when did you move to Nashville, Craig?
I moved to Nashville in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Chasing the music. I was out of a bad divorce. I got married young and decided that she decided that it wasn't for us. So
yeah.
I had to follow suit, and I was like, what better place to go than to go to Nashville and you know, start over. If I'm starting over, I want to start over doing something that I love, and that's music. And
right.
I moved out here and quickly signed a publishing deal as a writer with EMI as a staff writer, and I wrote for them for the first like 3 or 4 years that I was here.
Wow, cool. Well, and I know I used to go to Nashville 4, 5, 6 times a year. Haven't been there for a while. I know it's changed a lot. Everybody said, D.C., you won't even recognize it. It's nothing but tall, skinny buildings and cranes everywhere. But it's still Nashville. It's still Music City.
Yes, and it still has the magic that's always been here. And there, you can still find some of those studios to get into, and I like to get in those and go write. And it's just, it's such a beautiful town. It's a sometimes we call it a music town with a drinking town with a music problem. I guess sometimes gotta watch yourself.
I like, yeah, believe me, I know a lot of people that live there. And if I'm not mistaken, you live in Franklin, where I know a lot of people. You're probably passed in front of them many times. And they used to call that L.A. South 30 years ago. And you know, quite frankly, after I finished touring with Eddie Money. And the music business, you could tell, was shifting. L.A. was becoming more of a rap and hip-hop, and Nashville was expanding into beyond country, into pop and rock. But, you know, we didn't make the move. But, you know, it's funny. I have some dear friends that have moved there recently, and you know, I don't know, sometimes maybe I just got to scratch that itch. It's still a great place with great people. I know that.
Oh, it definitely is. And you're right. There's a lot of folks that have been in the industry for a long time are moving here, and it's kind of crazy. You walk in the grocery store and you see Kip Winger running around or something.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
You?
Wow, that's wild. But let's talk about your journey and winning The Voice Season 7. I watched The Voice a little bit. I've told the story on the show a couple times. I know Adam Levine's dad very well, and I happen to, you know, be at a big party for Fred's, obviously, years ago before Adam was famous. And he said, yeah, my son's going to be singing tonight. I said, great. You know, didn't think much about it. We're roaming around the backyard. All of a sudden, I hear this guy singing Beatles songs. And I said, is that your son? It turned out to be Adam Levine. But tell me about the experience.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, and it's before, they were still called Kara's Flowers. And Adam goes, there's nothing going on, man. I, you know, he was frustrated. And he says, well, we're playing the Roxy next week right here in L.A. And so my wife at the time my late wife, and I went to the Roxy, and I said, that kid, he has that it factor. I said, he's a star. And like 6 months later, they became Maroon 5, got management. Clive became aware of them, and they had their first single, and the rest is history. But tell us about your journey. How did it start? What made you say, I want to audition for The Voice? Because what a journey, and not only a journey, you won.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, because I kind of started out the story telling you, you know, I moved out of a bad situation to move to Nashville to chase the dream. And things started going really well for me quickly. And a little, you know, I was like, oh, they said it's a, you know, a 10-year town. And I kind of balked at that and was like, yeah, you know, I'm having success. And I did. I had a lot of things going good for me. The one thing that seemed to keep running from me was getting that, you know, the radio success. Every time I would get into a record deal or a great one, something crazy would happen. One of them, the band that I was working with, fell apart in the studio, and that one kind of went to the side. And then the next one, I was out on radio tour, and that's when Sony switched over. They changed presidents in town while I was on radio tour, and I come home to they had cleaned the roster.
Oh, I know. Such a familiar story, things like this.
Yeah, it was, incidentally, I'm in a band with one of the guys that also got dropped at the same time. James, you had a similar situation go on. It was crazy. But, you know, so that put me kind of trying to figure it out again. I was like, man, I don't know what I want to do. I just know that I got to do something different. And
right.
I got an email that was asking if I was interested in being on The Voice, and I thought it was a joke. I thought it was like the way the world was treating me at the moment, or at least I thought. It was like, it's got to be a cruel joke, you know. Mm-hmm. And luckily enough, it wasn't, and I was able to drive down the street and go meet with the producers, and I sang for them. And this is the crazy part of the story, is that actually they told me I had to bring an accompanist with me, and I had just played a jam session in Nashville, talking about how crazy the small world it is, with a guy named Peter Keys, mm-hmm. who at the time, and still does, plays for Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Uh-huh.
He played for quite a different, he played for George Clinton for a long time also before that, but he was my accompanist when I went into audition for The Voice.
Wow. And he plays what?
Took him along. He plays piano.
Oh, okay.
He was, so I took him in as a keyboard player to play along with me, so I had an accompanist with me. But yeah, so I did it, and then they called me back, and they're like, hey, you made it through. So I had to prepare myself mentally for, because I was definitely jaded at that point, because I'd been in Nashville for about 10 or 11 years.
Sure.
And had been through the gamut. And I was, you know, for me, it's like, is this the right thing to do? I was anti television shows and all that kind of stuff at that moment. Because I believed, you know, you're supposed to be the road dog. You're supposed to go out and, right. you know, play every honky-tonk in the country. And I was doing that, too.
Yeah.
But I kind of had a realization moment where it was like, you know, I could continue to down the path that I'm doing and hope that it works, or I can take the opportunity to go on television and reach about the amount of people I reach in 5 or 6 years in one night.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what made my decision to do that.
Yeah. I'll say the show's huge. All right, carry on. This is so fascinating to me.
So yeah, so I get out there, and that was, I guess, the first decision that I had to make was to open myself back up and put all the jadedness behind me.
Right.
Be open to learn something new, even though I felt like I had been through the gamut along. You know, I was like, I kind of know the ropes, but maybe I don't know the ropes like these guys do. And that was really my focus, was to not be jaded and to be open to learn something new. And I definitely did during the whole process. It was definitely nerve-wracking originally to go in there, because I realized that probably one of the hardest things for me was to be judged by, you know, a 30, 45-second clip
right.
of yourself.
Sure.
Because it doesn't, and how to put yourself into that, mm-hmm. and be okay with the outcome of it too.
Yeah, wow.
So that was a lot of what I had to think about. But luckily enough, between the folks, the producers, and the folks that were part of the show, really treated us like we were superstars the whole time, and nice. It really helped keep our brains in that mindset that we could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the second battle that I really had to fight there was staying in my own lane and realizing that I could sing my way, but I couldn't, you know, I was not a guy that would go out there and compete with somebody on vocal runs or anything
exactly,
like that. I had to
exactly.
do what worked for me.
Yeah.
And stay out of my own head and say, this is what you do. Do what you do really well, and don't compare yourself to everyone else.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so what was the first song when you first sang for the Idol people? What was the song you did?
The first song I sang two songs for them, and incidentally was the one that I auditioned for that I did during the blind auditions was "The Whiskey Ain't Working" by Travis Tritt.
Oh yeah,
who I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
And we're actually going out. I think we got 6 or 7 dates with him.
I saw that. We'll get into your trio in a minute. But so you sang that.
That was one of the songs that we sang. And then I sang a song that was ended up recording later on and put on the end of one of my albums. It was a song called "Presence of the Lord" by Blind Faith that Eric Clapton had written.
Yeah, I know that song.
And that was kind of when I heard that song the first time, I just bawled my eyes out.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, that was what I was looking for. I was looking for where I belonged. And I felt like it was fitting to sing that song in the moment of going and trying a new venture.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you know, it's just a typical story of an artist, a singer, a musician. You know, it's not an easy path. But so there you are. They say you've made the cut. What happens next?
Then it starts getting real, because it puts you, you know, you go through all of that process, and you're have the producers and the coaches are the ones that are kind of choosing, you know, whether you're staying or going. And once it got to those battles, I was let go. Blake let me go the first one.
Yeah.
And Gwen turned around and saved me. So it was another one of those, like, almost habit that gets ripped out of your hands. But then was given yet another chance.
Yeah.
And that happened a couple of times on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of times. Twice for me.
Yeah.
So it was definitely just perseverance in my brain. But I knew that if I could make it to the people, to the voter, you know, people that were voting, that I felt like I had a chance.
Right.
And once that happened, that's when I felt really, really comfortable, because then I was just going out there to perform and do what I could do and do the best I could, and then let the chips fall like they may.
Yeah, and kudos to you for keeping up your spirits and your enthusiasm through all those changes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, when you first sang, when they had the chairs turned around, so Blake and Pharrell turned around, if I recall?
Yes, that's correct.
Wow.
Blake and Pharrell. And to an extent, it was a difficult decision for me, even though I was, you know, pursuing the country market.
Yeah.
I've always been a huge fan of Pharrell.
Sure.
And I have gospel roots as growing up in church, and it was very tempting to go that route and just to see what would happen musically.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it might be fun, but I ultimately had to pick what my brain was saying. You dance with the one that brought you.
Yeah, no, that's right. You stick with your strengths, and of course, if you're in that market, and you know, it doesn't get any better than Blake Shelton, and it ended up being victorious for you, mind you, through a few changes. But what was that like to be on there and they said, you know, you're the winner? That must have just been an incredible moment.
Oh my goodness, it was mind blowing, because I honestly didn't know that if I would make it or not, because there was the cards were again stacked against me.
Uh-huh.
We were talking about Adam Levine. He had three of his contestants against me.
Oh,
wow. This is a very interesting lineup here.
Yeah.
But when they announced it, I immediately, it was funny, I should have been enjoying the moment, and I did to an extent, but my brain immediately went to, now the work begins.
Uh-huh.
what do we have going next? You know, that was my immediate question. So where are we going? What are we doing?
Sure.
Make sure everything. And while I was on the show, the one thing that they did not provide was booking agents.
Uh-huh.
And so I had reached out to some of the folks that I knew in Nashville, and I reached out to CAA and to William Morris both, and had them come out, and we had meetings while I was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
To decide where I wanted to go, and ultimately I went with William Morris, and so that made it so that when I won the show, within 3-4 days after that, I had my first full band show out playing.
Oh, nice. Wow. I mean, and
I already had a band rehearsing for me in Nashville. I'd called a friend of mine to put together the band and start rehearsing them. So we were ready to rock and roll before I'd even won the show.
Outstanding. And what a boost. And now, you know, I hear various things and I think I know what happens, but once you win a show like that, are you obligated to a label? They kind of have a label that you have to record for. Is that how that works?
Yes. Yeah, so when you walk in there, you sign a contract at the top of the show. So whether, you know, whether you win or not, that is your autograph. And if they choose to implement that contract, then so be it. That's what it is.
I see.
But the good thing is it's not just a contract that's laid in front of you. It's something that you can help negotiate. And they provide an attorney for all of the contestants. And the contestants have to choose who that attorney is. And we had like 4 or 5 different choices.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God for the attorney. Because we were able to make sure that the contract was friendly enough for us in case anything went crazy.
Right.
And we had an out. And it was not that I wanted an out, but I wanted to make sure that there was one available.
Of course.
And And, you know, I think the initial record contract was with Republic. But they had a deal with, if it was a country artist, that you went to Big Machine in Nashville.
Okay. Doesn't get any better than that.
Absolutely. And so, as long as they know that they're getting you, which they did.
Oh, I see.
That's where the problem started.
I see. Wow. Please elaborate. That's interesting.
So I walked into the offices for the first time in Nashville and said, "Hey guys," because this is the holidays, you know, but I was already playing shows and I wanted to know how much money I needed to put back because you got royalties and everything else that are going on.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Who are you?" Uh-huh. I was like, "I'm Craig Wayne Boyd. I'm signed to you. And I won The Voice." it was quite an interesting conversation.
Yeah. A little deflating maybe.
It was to an extent, but, I rolled with it, and we got things rolling for a bit, and it was a blast to get out and go to radio, and we were out working a single, but we had just put one out off of The Voice.
Mm-hmm.
Baby's Got a Smile on Her Face, and that single sold over 1.5 million, I believe, the first week. So
it
caused me to be, myself and Garth Brooks are the only two, well, now Morgan Wallen recently.
Yeah,
country market has tied that, but we were the only two at that time to ever debut at number one.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that, Craig. Outstanding.
Absolutely.
Well,
so that was a huge, that was a huge thing to happen for me, and it's something that'll never be taken away. It's that I'm in one of three people in the entire world to ever debut at number one.
Yeah, when you can put your name and Garth in the same sentence, that's nothing wrong with it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I read something about a song that was meant for Blake, but you sang it. Is that the song?
Yes, that's the song.
Wow.
Sure is.
Wow, man, that's killer. And so that kind of jumpstart, and what happened after that?
We went on a radio tour to put it out, but they didn't service radio for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that number one debut disappeared, after a couple of months.
Yeah.
It was off the chart, and then trying to revive that again. So then we were trying to figure out what we wanted to do. And, at that point is when I chose to, ask the label to let me off the label, thinking that I would go somewhere else.
Sure.
Because I had because there was promises that if you get out of this, we're going to take you.
Yep.
And, as soon as I got out of it, they didn't want anything. Then I got ghosted.
Oh, man. Welcome to the music business. It's so crazy.
Exactly. So, that was the naive part of me saying,
right,
I'm going to believe this,
Yeah.
Try to figure it out. They're like, "Well, you know what? We'll take care of you over here."
Yeah.
And then they disappear.
Yeah.
And so that left me trying to figure it out fairly quick. So I recorded an album on my own with my own dollar, and which was another not smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I was sitting on an album, and once I got with another label, they wanted to record an album on their dollar.
Exactly.
So that forced me to put that one on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went out and started pushing radio again. And it just, things were just not working well for me after that was, other than being on tour. To me, on tour was where it was at, getting out with the fans. I mean, it was nonstop. I think we did 230 some odd dates that in 2015.
Wow.
And I'll right at 200 or so for 2016.
Oh my gosh.
Those crazy, crazy touring years for me.
Yeah.
Basically just lived on the bus. I would come home in time for a good friend of mine who helped me out a lot. Her name is Andy Lynn, and she I would hand her my suitcase, and she would take off with it and bring me back a suitcase full of clothes, and here you go.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, listen, that's
like how life was, and I'm sure you understand those moments.
I do. I mean, we used to have a saying in Air Supply, once you pack, you never come back, and we'd be gone for months and months at a time. But that is the music business, and especially the country music world is all about the fans. It's all about putting yourself out there and just going to every little town, every radio station. Now, when you were touring like that, were you touring as Craig Wayne Boyd?
Yes, I was touring as Craig Wayne Boyd doing all that. And seriously, major, major props to the fans that are out there, because that was the stuff that really got me through seeing their faces. You know, there were folks that, even to this day, I mean, they travel across country. If I announce a show somewhere, they're going to be there. And it's folks like that that not only got me through then, but still get me through now.
Yeah. You just said it. The country fans are as loyal as they come. And you know, listen, it's a bumpy road out there. I mean, I tell people it's a roller coaster. You and I and anybody in the music business, the highest of highs and the lowest of lows and a lot in between. It's just the way it is. And you think about, you know, winning The Voice and, you know, to get that sort of thing and putting a single that competes with Garth Brooks' record for a single. It's incredible, but nothing's guaranteed the next day. And we know that the labels, so many stories I've heard, Craig, about people that have a deal and songwriters and, oh, geez, they got a new owner, I got dropped. It's a tough way to go, but you should be very proud of what you have accomplished. And we're going to move on to what you're doing now, which is absolutely incredible in my mind. But, you know, it sounds like you've kept a great attitude, which is so important because it's what you love. You've been given a God-given talent, and you know, you still go out there and sing and your fans still love you.
Oh yeah. That is the beauty of it, is that I call it tenacity or stupidity one.
Well, you got it now. You got a life in Tennessee, Nashville area. You got your five kids, a beautiful wife, and you know, so you've been really gifted. But, you know, your talent and a musician, you know, that burning in the heart never goes away. And then now, kind of what I was saying at the top of the show, that COVID's been lifted and people are starting to play live again. I mean, it just killed live music for a couple of years. But it does appear that it's back, and we're going to, again, kind of...
Yeah, that's been the beauty. That really has been the beauty of it, because that's... I was in talks. I was not out of the last record deal, quite yet, but I had started talking with the boys about coming together as a group, and then we were kind of writing some songs together and working up some stuff and just kind of as a side project. And then we had the tornadoes hit in Nashville.
Oh yeah.
And that kind of devastated a lot of our friends, and we were like, you know what, we should go ahead and announce ourselves as a group and put this song out that we had. It was, and unfortunately it's not one that I sent you, but it would have been perfect to send you.
Yeah, that's okay.
But it was one that was really touching to us. And then, you know, and little did we know that COVID was going to hit right then also. So that just put us back in the studio and really diving into our art and making sure that we had together the songs that we wanted to put out.
Interesting. So
it ended up being a blessing for us.
Yeah. Well, and that's what you got to do, man. You got to, you know, make things happen still, you know, and you just think of your journey. And now here you are with a great sounding trio called Texas Hill. Your website is texashillofficial.com, which is awesome. So,
right.
So the other two bandmates, the two main guys, so they were part of your band prior.
No, actually, what's interesting about it is that I, when I called these guys, they both had been through the same kind of stuff that I had been through.
Sure.
He had come in third on American Idol a few years before I went to The Voice. He was a fellow Texan, and I was a huge fan of his voice back, even when he was on the show. I'd watched him on there. And then Adam Wakefield, he plays keys and also sing. He's one of the main primary singers for the, you know, with the three of us in the trio.
Yep.
He had been on The Voice about a year after me. So it's two seasons after me.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come in second on The Voice.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Interestingly enough, I had met him when I come back home after winning the show, and I saw him playing keys and singing at a jam session. In fact, one of the jam sessions that I had met Peter Keys at.
Wow.
And he was playing. I was like, dude, I don't know who you are, but you're amazing. Would you be interested in playing keys for me? And he was like, well, I think I'm gonna go do what you've been doing.
Oh.
he was talking about going to do The Voice. I was like, well, let's stay in contact. And I ended up going out and doing a bunch of shows with me on tour. opening up after he had been on The Voice. So we connected that way. And when I called them to do the trio thing, we had both, we were all three kind of feeling about the same way as I was. And it was nice to get back, because there's that joy and that happiness that you have being in a band.
Yep.
And not being a solo, not just being all the weight on your name. That is very freeing.
Yeah.
The band aspect of it, though you have to learn to give and take a lot more. It also means that you don't have to carry the load and be the bearer of all the burden 100% of the time, that you have those other shoulders that you can lean on when you need it.
Yeah.
And, we were all missing that in our lives. And so that really was one of the other driving factors of us coming together as Texas Hill.
Very interesting. And again, you guys have the similar experience, the same similar mindset, and you can get there and kind of share those experiences and build off of that, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Because it's, even though they've, now I guess The Voice has had 18 seasons or something like that, there's still only, three people per season that are in those top that have been through the whole gamut.
Yeah.
Any of those shows. And so that crowd is still, at this point, if my math does me correctly, that's still going to be less than 150 people in the United States that would understand the process that we went through.
Exactly. Yeah. And I knew a gal singer who was on American Idol fairly early on, and she made it to like the top 10 or 20. She didn't get to the real down and dirty because she ended up singing a song that wasn't a match for her. I'll never forget it. She ended up singing an R&B song and that just wasn't her thing. But, the exposure and the capitalizing on that exposure is the key. But I just love how you've persevered. Again, you think you're on top of the world one day and then next day you're not. But that's the music business. That's the arts. Whatever you do as an entertainer, whether you write a book, you do a movie, some people are going to love what you do. Some people are going to hate what you do. And a lot of people are going to just like you and help you get through. But to build a career and have it last, it's tougher than ever out there. But the things that you've accomplished and where you're headed with Texas Hill, and I know you guys are hitting the road. I think Craig might have told me you leave tomorrow or something. You leave pretty soon.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And yeah, we head out tomorrow to start really the first full band. I guess we've done some one-offs and weekend warrior stuff, but this is actually going out and touring as a full band again for the first time. We've done a lot of acoustic trio things, which is really fun, and it's great for the theaters, but now we're getting to take it out to going out with Travis Tritt, and we got to show, I believe, some stuff with Jake Owen.
Oh, nice.
Stuff with David Lee Murphy. There's some really cool stuff that's going on, and we got some shows with Darius Rucker.
All right.
Those. And now the fans are going to be trying to figure out where those are at. We haven't announced them yet. I'm just name dropping at the moment.
Perfect. Name drop all you want. And I know a bunch of shows I saw were in Texas, so you got to be fired up about that.
Oh, yeah. Getting back down to my home state. That's going to be a blast for sure.
I saw you're in Florida. So you're on the bus. Everything's ready to roll.
Yeah, that's where we're. I'll be loading up tomorrow, and we'll be out on the road again.
Fantastic. Well, listen, we've talked enough about Texas Hill. Let's play some music. You guys got a record out called Heaven Down Here. That's your debut album, and your latest single, which I have lined up, is called For the Love of It, which is a real positive, upbeat song. Tell me a little bit about the song before we play it, please.
Well, one of the things I had been doing. While starting up and we hadn't even played together yet, but I'd been going down to Muscle Shoals, to Fame Studios, the infamous Fame Studios.
Yep.
And going down there and writing with a couple of writers that I was really fond of. And I just found an energy down there that I wanted the guys to experience. And, I'd set up a writer's retreat down there for 3 or 4 days. And we went down and so we were basically brought in a bunch of writers and the three of us, and we would just rotate writing 3 songs a day apiece. Just switching out writers from room to room and going from different studios to the patio to to Rick Hall's office. That was
cool. Awesome.
It was just really, really amazing energy to be down there writing.
Yeah.
And the very last day, one of the guys had late night had mentioned he had this idea for the love of it, and I was like, man, we got to write that. So we ended up bringing in all the writers that were left, and we all sat down and in Studio B at Fame Studios, and this is the song that came out of it.
Awesome. For the love of it, this is Texas Hill.
You gotta do it for the love of it, like you can't get enough of it, like the air that you breathe, like honey to a bee, like everything you do is 'cause of it. When the push comes shoving, don't you worry, just rise above it. It might be hard to understand, don't just do it 'cause you can. You gotta do it for the love of it, like you can't get enough of it, like the air that you breathe, like honey to a bee, like everything you do is 'cause of it. When the push comes shoving, don't you worry, just rise above it. It might be hard to understand, don't just do it 'cause you can. You gotta do it for the love of it.
You can't do it for the money, you can't do it for the fame. You gotta do it for the joy, to make a joyful noise, for the love of the game.
Till you do it for yourself. When there's love in what you do, your light comes shining through, touching everybody else.
You gotta do it for the love of it, like you can't get enough of it, like the air that you breathe, like honey to a bee, like everything you do is 'cause of it. Don't you worry, just rise above it. It might be hard to understand, don't just do it 'cause you can. You gotta do it for the love of it. Everybody listen, you gotta do it for the love of it. It don't matter if you lose or win, when you get knocked down, you get back up again. Everybody listen, you gotta do it for the love of it. It don't matter if you lose or win, when you get knocked down, you get back up again. You gotta do it for the love of it. It don't matter if you lose or win, when you get knocked down, you get back up again.
You gotta do it for the love.
Everybody listen, you gotta do it for the love of it. You gotta do it.
Outstanding, man. Just a great tune with some great vocals.
Man, I appreciate it. It definitely is the kind of all the things we've been talking about is in all encompassed in that one song about though we've, you know, maybe it set out and was hoping for, you know, the crazy fame and for the money and all that good stuff. It's, you know, the root of it is that we love music. I love music, and
yeah,
no matter what, you're going to see me playing it.
Yeah, I love that. And as I'm listening, I'm thinking all three of you guys got to feel that lyric. I know that. So, you know, and that's what it is you got to do it for the love of it, especially now more than ever, because things are so topsy-turvy. The internet has changed the business. Anybody with a computer and internet skills can put out a song and, you know, it goes viral with 50 million hits and stuff like that. But this kind of music is just right from the gut, right from the soul. And so who's singing what there? I mean, all three of you guys just sound amazing together, yeah, obviously.
That was Adam kicking it off. And I was singing the low harmonies on that, and then I took the second verse, or perfect. The first verse, I guess it is.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
He took the second verse.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, that's outstanding. So that's out on radio now? I mean, you guys are pushing that right now? Where are you at?
It just came out last Friday it came out.
Perfect. Now, the album is called Heaven Down Here. Where can people get it?
You can get that anywhere that you purchase your music at, whether it be on iTunes or you listen via Spotify or any of the Amazon Music.
Yeah.
It's available everywhere. Or if you want a hard copy, you can go to TexasHillOfficial.com and there you can order those online. And, we do have vinyl for sale.
All right.
We had a production issue with those, so they have not come in yet, but they should be here any day is what I'm hearing.
You know what? It's so funny. I just did a little instrumental CD. It's a long story, but and I was considering vinyl, and he said, well, number one, the CDs take a long time, but vinyl takes a really long time. There's only a couple places in the U.S. that still do it. And he said it takes a while, but I'm sure, and your kind of music, I'm sure, would go really well. And the fans that you have, vinyl would be a really desirable product.
I'm very, very pumped. I'm excited about putting the album on vinyl myself and playing it on my record player. I know it sounds crazy, but I almost prefer listening to vinyl anymore just because you hear so much in there that you don't get when you're listening to it on in your car or if you're on your iPhone or whatever else. You don't hear all those intricacies that you hear in the vinyl.
Yep. And the purest will nothing but vinyl will do. Well, I mean, that song sounds... So how many writers are on that song? How many people out of that little session are on that song?
Do you? Let me think about that. One, two, three... I think there's like six or seven of us.
Perfect.
Took that many to get that many of it rhymes.
Yeah. Well, hey, good point. But it really does work. And we're in here in the studio. I'm with Danny, and we're listening. Toes were tapping and heads were bopping, buddy. Congratulations. Beautiful song. Now, time's going by so darn fast. I love this next tune called Neon Heart, too. Tell me about Neon Heart before we play it.
Neon Heart is actually one of the only songs on the album that we did not write.
Oh.
But it was one that was written by my hero, and his name is James LeBlanc. He was actually a writer on For the Love of It also. He and I think are tied for the most songs on the album.
Okay.
But he's just one of those guys that just writes from the heart, and when I heard it for the first time, that was one of the early songs that I brought to the guys and said, hey, we should cut this. And we started out, we all flipped out, flipped parts around a bunch of times, and ended up me taking the lead on this one.
All right.
The rest is what you got.
Yeah, well, it you know, because I listened to them all before the show, and they all grabbed me for sure. But this one, for some reason, just caught my ear. Neon Heart by Texas Hill.
Deja vu, dressed in blue, and I know what I'll probably do. Pull up in that bar stool next to her. A different name, same old game. See if somehow my luck has changed. And even if I go down in flames, let it burn. And I go and pretend that I'm not alone in the dark. And I know how it ends long before it ends. parquet with me and my neon heart. She says she'll dance if it's a waltz, Marlboro Reds and small talk. Let the tequila, lime and salt take us there. Just like that, it's closing time. I hope she wants what's on my mind. Then she whispers, "Your place in mine, baby, I don't care." And I go and pretend that I'm not alone in the dark. And I know next to her, and I go and pretend that I'm not alone in the dark, and I know how it ends long before it ever starts, but that's okay with me and my neon heart. That's okay with me and my neon heart.
That's a great tune. And man, you sound fantastic on that, man.
Man, brother, I appreciate that big time. That was, I feel like that song, I don't know, it just had like a timeless feel to it for me.
Exactly.
And that's a, yeah, just if, even though I'm singing it, I can. I'm listening back right now. It was
yeah,
cool to it was like, well, wow, this is cool.
It is a trip when you listen to them, and you know, I'm on headphones too when I do the show because, as I say, I'm going down to Pro Tools while we're talking. But man, it just it timeless. That's the best word I could think. And I'm sorry, I did not catch the name of the guy who wrote the song. I know you said it.
His name is James LeBlanc.
Uh huh. Fantastic, and the production is nice and tasty, and your voice just
phenomenal writer.
Sits right in the pocket, buddy. I love that. So is that going to be released as a single? Have you guys already kind of moved on off that one, or where's
no, that's a song that's still in the, you know, the really the first release that we had was during I guess we released a song to Texas market called Four Roses, but we haven't released anything nationwide until just this For the Love of It, so we've still got the full album to work.
Oh, well, man, and you do all these live, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, I get, and where did you recorded this in Nashville with your guy, your team, yeah, or did you?
We recorded over at Ocean Way Studios.
Oh, sure.
In Nashville. And what we did is we ended up, we went through a different, you know, a couple of different avenues, checking out different producers and things like that.
Yeah.
And from that, we figured out how to record our vocals for sure. And that was to have a triangle of mics in the middle of the room, and we recorded all the vocals at the same time.
Oh.
So there was a bleed over. So you had, there's no auto tune. There's no any extra help vocally on those. You just had to sing.
Yeah.
Sing it until you had it right, which was, that to me was part of the beauty of what we did with this album.
Absolutely.
Then we brought in the band. We, you know, so far as bringing in the band, we everybody tracked at the same time. So the only thing that was overdubs, literally, was we went in and sang the vocals after the fact.
Uh huh.
But that was really the only overdubs that were going on during this whole album.
Yeah. Well, that's I know. Alan Sides, who used to own Ocean Way, I know he owns the one here still, but didn't Curb buy it, or Belmont, or somebody? He sold it a while back.
Yeah, I believe Curb, Curb owns it now.
Yeah, yeah, I can picture that studio very well. I've been there. Well, I just love it. And the sound of your, I mean, all you guys are great singers, there's no doubt. But since you're my guest, I'm going to blow your horn most. And you sound great, man. And I just love the music. And I wish you guys nothing but the best as you head out on the road and go on tour and make some new fans. And right now, man, I look at the glasses half full of the music business. Yeah, it's different and it's tough. But there are no rules, and you guys get out there and you're willing to, you know, take the music to the people. And really, it's all about licensing your songs, touring, and selling merchandise. And you know, you guys will go out there and hit them. And I know how good you sound live. I've seen some clips. So, man, I got to believe you're pumped up. I know it's probably a little tough to leave your family, but, you know, that's part of being a musician.
Absolutely. You know, that's what we do it for. Again, we do it not only to provide for our families, which that's the bonus that we get out of it. We just getting out and getting to play for people, the reaction and seeing people. It's been great just this past month of being out, and you're starting to see half of the crowd now is singing the words with you. And it's like, man, this is now it's starting to get real. This is, this is going to be a cool ride for us. And the other thing is that fans of not only country music, but fans of other genres of music are loving what we're doing, because I don't want to put down country music at all, but it does. We kind of just went with what was in our hearts, and for us, that ended up being kind of genreless.
Yeah. Well, you know, the magic word, crossover, and that's how I hear it. That's when I first heard it. I brought that word up at breakfast about some other material and some other artists that I know. And if you can cross genres, as you say, and there are no boundaries anymore, you know, it just takes somebody to pick up a song for the love of it. It's got a positive message. Everybody needs that. Neon Heart is just, like you say, it kind of transcends all the any trends that are going by, and it's just a great song. So we have time for one more. Where the Lonely Go, or Heaven Down Here, where did you take your pick? Which one would you like to play?
You know what, let's go with the title track of the album. Let's go with Heaven Down Here. That song was it was really fun to record that one, and when we wrote that one, Adam and I started that song on his front porch, and with the idea of just, you know, with everything going on during COVID, it's like, you know, trying to find peace, trying to find happiness. And, you know, if you look hard enough, you know, you can find that in your family. You can find that, you know, in different things in life. And it's just a matter of if you're looking for it, you know, being positive.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was a strong statement to make for us, especially for the album.
Yeah. Well, so you and Adam wrote this one?
We brought Casey in towards the end of it to kind of add that last bit of flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the lyrics and stuff were Adam and I.
Yeah.
Musically, it kind of went where it went when Casey joined us on it. And that it was really fun, too, to experiment, because we were trying out different people singing different verses and stuff, and we realized that we just needed it to be the whole song to be three-part harmony. So there's versus what most people would do in production, and that would be have majority of the song sang by one person and you have your moments of harmony. We have one line in the whole song that's sang by one person, and the rest of it's all harmonies, which I thought was great.
Outstanding. Heaven Down Here from Texas Hill.
Heaven down. on me. Somewhere waiting on you, find yours and I'll find mine. Keep on trying, cause no matter what you heard, there's a heaven down here on earth. Lord knows down here, it can be hard to find. Somewhere waiting on you, find yours and I'll find mine. There's a heaven down here on. There's a heaven down here on.
Heaven down here, Texas. I bet that one's fun to play live, huh?
Oh, it's a blast. That one goes about 10 minutes longer than the recording.
Yeah, I can hear that jamming all night long. Man, just a well-produced, well-written, and just well-performed. Your guys' voices are amazing together. Texas Hill, www.texashillofficial.com is the website. The album is Heaven Down Here. We've got the voice winner from season 7, just an amazing talent, Craig Wayne Boyd. Thanks so much for being on the show, Craig. You've been awesome. Love your music. And I look forward to, you know, when you get off the road and rest a little bit, you and I'll talk. Maybe we'll write something. I love your voice. I love what you're doing. I love how you got your head up and ready for something new, buddy.
Don, I appreciate the offer, man, to do that. And I will be calling you to get in that writing room with you.
Yeah, I really, really dig how you've just kept going, man. That's what you got to do. And it's a labor of love, but you're taking care of your family, but you're bringing this positive. And that's the other thing I want to say about your music. It's uplifting. It's positive. That's what people need. Thank you so much, Craig, for being on the show. We want to thank the Star Worldwide Networks back in Phoenix. They're the best ever. Dave, the Mayor Pratt, my producer, Rockin' Robin Cote, she's the best, wrote a beautiful book called Soul Stirrings. Everybody I've turned on to it. And Craig, if you ever want to read it, it's called Soul Stirrings, written by Robin. She's amazing. She loves music. She takes care of me big time. Pray for peace, obviously, now more than ever. John Lennon said it best, all we need is love, huh? It's just crazy. And your music is all about positive. Pray for our troops. And all the troops over there in Ukraine that are trying so hard to defend their country. But the U.S., our troops, past, present, and future, respect your police officers and just take time to enjoy life. It's bands like Texas Hill that keep it going with a positive spirit, man. All the best to you, Craig, and give your bandmates and your partners my best and just go make some good music.
Much love, brother. Thank you.
Okay, brother. Take care. Good night, everybody. Appreciate you so much tuning in to Don Cromwell Live. Good night.
Thanks for listening to Don Cromwell Live. Producer, songwriter, musician, and former Air Supply and Eddie Money bassist, Don Cromwell. Every week, Don Cromwell Live connects the artist with you, the fan. Hear Don Cromwell Live as it happens Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, or on demand 24/7 on StarWorldWideNetworks.com. And follow Don at Facebook.com/Don Cromwell and Twitter at Don Cromwell Live. Don Cromwell Live from StarWorldWideNetworks.com.